wake up. It's time to go.
With the slightly ominous title of Death, Melbourne's Grand Salvo, aka Paddy Mann, has created a classic fable for modern times, as it were, with his fourth album just released through the Spunk and Preservation labels. To take us through the record and to talk more about the themes on Tape Relay, Paddy joins us on the phone now. Hi, Paddy.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, thank you. Now, this new album, Death, follows on from 2005's The Temporal Wheel. But I understand it was conceived well before The Temporal Wheel, is that correct?
Yeah, it was 2003 when I came up with the idea and started writing it, and then I kind of finished it in early 2004. It was all kind of planned out and finished in terms of writing, and then it just was a long process of trying to record it, which kind of kept falling down on.
So recording issues aside, when you came back to the songs, you know, had you sort of left them well alone after The Temporal Wheel, and what was it like when you were coming back to them when it came around to recording?
Yeah, that was a problem, how to keep the performances of them, because I had to do them so many times. You know, there's a real danger of getting sick of them and going through the motions rather than actually believing in them when you're singing them. It's like you've got to, you know, when you're recording and it's going well, you kind of, it's like you're performing, you're kind of away in whatever world you have to be in when you perform them. And, you know, when you've done it over and over again, and then different sessions over and over again, and it's just, you've done hundreds of times and it's not even recorded, and, you know, you've been playing it live for a while and the original immediacy of them is kind of gone. We just had to keep vitalising ourselves about it. Because me and Zoe, they're all harmony-based songs, so that the songs, we could perform them as if we were doing it live. So we managed to keep the realness of them. But it was hard trying to inspire yourself going back and doing them however many times.
So had the idea of the songs after this sort of gestation period, had they changed significantly from the vision that you'd had back in 2003?
No, not the final. I mean, it was originally going to be really short and be only 5 songs long. It was going to be like an EP kind of thing. And it's going to be really stripped back, just guitar and voice. Andrew Kaduri from Preservation contacted me when I was overseas and asked me whether I'd like to do something on Preservation. And I came up with the idea and then got back to Melbourne and met Zoe, who I'd heard sing before I left, and asked her to, you know, start singing with me, and then I developed the kind of harmony-based stuff that it turned into. But apart from, like, 1 or 2 songs, which I changed right at the very end because I realised they were kind of rooted back in the original idea and it didn't carry it, didn't make any sense in the dynamics, because I had no choice with the song order. So basically, no. It was all, you know, the orchestrations grew up a fair bit around the songs, because I was going to leave the songs completely bare and have the interludes orchestrated, but it kind of crept into the songs as well.
I'll talk about the orchestrations in a minute, but you mentioned Zoe a few times, and even though Grand Salvo is intrinsically Paddy Mann, on this record there seems to be more of that collaborative feel with the greater presence of Zoe Randall's vocals and also the narration from your brother Spencer. So,
my dad.
Oh, it's your dad, right. Yeah. So how much of a hand did they have in sort of helping realise the record?
I guess a lot in them. Zoe certainly did anyway, because I had her in mind when I was writing all the songs, and her voice was very much in my mind, and I knew what she could do. She can sing really low for a girl, so she can most of the time sing underneath me, which is pretty rare. So Zoe was always in my mind very strongly when I was writing everything. But my dad came in at the very last minute, because I'd been trying to find a voice for ages and ages, a perfect speaking voice, and I couldn't find anyone. And then just at the last minute, I realised I kind of just wanted my dad's voice. So I asked him, and he's pretty apprehensive at first. and he found it very uncomfortable and awkward to do it, but he ended up doing a really good job.
Let's talk about the orchestration. It is quite a step up from your previous records, which have always been quite sparse sounding. So how did they creep in, and who did you get to work on the album?
I wrote it all myself. I studied music at uni, so I kind of know how to do all that stuff, and it's kind of what I've always wanted to do. It just takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of money to get stuff like that recorded. And it's something I never had in the past, and I had a grant. So a couple of years in, after getting the grant, I realised I could actually do it properly, even though I had to still do it on the cheap relative to, you know, what I wanted to do. Yeah, I guess it's pretty much just an extension of what I've done in the past. It does feel a little bit like I make the same album every time, except slightly closer to what I want or something. But, yeah, in terms of musicians, a lot of people I've used in the past who I trust, and some new amazing players who I've met in searching for musicians.
On Death, your writing is five characters in a 50-minute album, which is a fairly dense affair or a dense idea. How do you work to convey such grand themes of death and loss into an album without going too complicated?
I started the simplest possible idea I could, which is just the scene of the bear crossing the ice and falling through, because I knew it was going to be difficult to get to squeeze everything in, so the better it was going to be. So yeah, just building everything gradually around that scene was the way I decided to do it, which ended up getting slightly more complex than I'd planned with the storyline. But still, it's a really simple story. It's like a children's story. Once you've got that, you can work everything into it and colour everything in as much shades and as you can, slicing off the pure physical description of what's going on to the minimum, and, you know, trying to get everything else in there as possible. It's hard to do with the amount of, you know, there's a limited amount of syllables and words you can squeeze into songs without making them too wordy and without getting too bogged down.
And I guess that's very similar to how if you were to write a children's book, because, you know, you can't use a huge amount of words that children won't know as well, so you've got to simplify these ideas.
Yeah, writing songs in general is kind of like writing a children's book. And then even better, you don't have to worry about punctuation and grammar. It's like a different language, like texting or something.
The human character Shalem has a rather sorrowful tale of living as a beggar, I understand, in order to sort of get back to the nature. Where does he come from?
Well, I've always been a bum. I always feel like I'm kind of like one step away from becoming one or something. You just fall off the edge of society and there you are, you hit rock bottom. In fact, I was once mistaken for a bum when I was asking people for directions in the city, and this high-powered businesswoman holding like a tray of coffees stopped me before I could finish my request for directions and kind of shook her and went, no, I'm sorry, mate. No change, mate, sorry. And just kind of stormed past me. So I think I've got a slight fear/infatuation with people who have just kind of can't function properly in society and, you know, have this life which is completely free in some ways, but they're trapped in their own situation and completely unable to escape.
There's a very strong pastoral imagery to your work. How much of a country soul are you, and, you know, do you spend much time out of the city?
No, not really. No, I do like it, but I grew up in the city and I really ran the country. In a week or so, I'll be going up to my parents. Have got a little shack on this stretch of land near Dean's Marsh. It's like a little shack with like tank water and a long drop toilet and no electricity or anything. And I really love being there, but at the same time, I could never live there.
Do you think, though, that because if you aren't spending that much time in the outdoors, as it were, you know, is there a risk that you're sort of romanticising this nature?
Oh, yeah, it's completely romanticised. sentimentalized and fantasized and, you know, constructed. It's just a kind of fake world, like a stage set or something.
Mm.
It doesn't have any grounding in reality, really.
With the orchestration on the record, the last couple of times I've seen you live has been with you and your guitar. So how's it translating to a live context?
The Melbourne launch I've just done last week, we did it in a recital hall, and, you know, it was really nice acoustics, and I had like 20 people on stage with me, like a string section. Basically everything that you hear on the album is there. And we did the entire thing through straight. And that would be the way I would love to do it everywhere, but, you know, it's just impossible to really travel with it in any way. So it'll just be a slightly bigger ensemble when I do the Sydney launch. We'll just have some percussion. Zoe will be singing. Olive, my little brother, will be there, and a few other musicians who I've kind of roped in. But it certainly won't be anything approaching what is actually in the album, even though I'd like to one day.
Well, I look forward to hearing that approximation anyway. Paddy, thanks for talking to us on Tape Relay. We'll hear now.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. We'll hear now the song I Am Death.
Thank you.